Lowe's knows how to set off your July 4th with savings. Right now, buy one, get one free on select one-coat coverage interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Plus, get two select 2 or 2.5-quart red, white, and blue annuals for just $10. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, excludes Alaska and Hawaii. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for more details.
BT Sport Pods.
The appointment of Martin O'Neill in the early noughties proved to be a pivotal moment in the history of Celtic Football Club. In this podcast, I'm joined by Chris Sutton, Jackie McNamara and Stillian Petrov, who played crucial roles for the manager during his trophy-laden spell in Glasgow. This is Curry Club, the Scottish Football Sessions.
Gents, really good to see you. I'm looking forward to this, the stories, the dressing room that you shared, and so much to discuss on the manager himself. Chris, I'll come to you first. It's a period in your career, I assume, you enjoy looking back on.
Yes, well, I'd done everything in England. I'd won the Premier League and the Golden Boot and
and a great spell at Chelsea.
Exactly. I'd had a poor season at Chelsea, and I'd had a few options of where I could move to. I could have gone to Spurs, I could have gone to Middlesbrough, but Martin had just gone north of the border, and Celtic had done poorly the previous season. And it wasn't too difficult a decision in the end because of Martin. That's why I went north of the border, and the fact that that he was serious about really pushing Celtic forward. Celtic, I knew, had some good players. To be honest, I hadn't heard of Jackie and Stillian at that particular time. I knew they had Henrik Larsson. But no, it was an easy decision in the end, but one which, I wasn't totally comfortable with it. I'd never been up to Glasgow I'd been up to watch a game actually. Ended up in the Hoops Bar with the Blackburn Rovers team many, many years ago, and there was a big scrap, and I was thinking, blimey, this city's mental. And
what did Martin say to persuade you, though, to come?
He was. I'd had a difficult season at Chelsea, but he'd... I'd always scored a lot of goals against Martin's teams, and I don't know whether he'd set his defence up correctly at Leicester City when we played against, but I'd always done pretty well against Martin's teams. And I liked Martin as a manager. And the biggest thing for me was that Martin moving north of the border, it was a big deal because Leeds United were flying at this particular time, and they'd gone in for Martin as well. And then to think, well, you know, why is he actually gone north of the border? The one thing I couldn't understand was the gap the previous season. I think it was 21 points, yeah, where Rangers had pretty much demolished Celtic the previous season. You know, why has he taken that on? You know, it's a challenge, but it was a huge challenge. But the fact that Martin's mindset was that you know, it was a... I think he was trying to put Celtic back to you know, a club with a great history to where they once were. But it's okay thinking that and believing you can do it. It's another thing actually going up there and getting it done.
And what a first season it was, of course, spectacular. Winning the treble, the first Celtic manager to do that since Jock Stein, I believe. 7 trophies over 5 years. But before we get to all of those trophies and the run to the UEFA Cup final as well, you guys were at the club before Martin joined. It'd been a difficult few years, hadn't it, Jackie? Managers had come and gone.
Yeah, I think after Vim, you know, when we won the league 97-98, there's a lot of change after that. With Dr. Joe came in, and John Barnes after that. John Barnes actually started the season well. Yeah. Henrik broke his leg, and it kind of all went downhill from there, and the gap was quite enormous at the time. And then obviously Kenny took the team at the end of the season, we won the cup. But again, when the first day Martin came in, obviously everything changed, not just because he signed Chris Sutton, the superstar. You know, he brought in big characters into the winning mentality, and that's what he brought in for the first day.
Yeah, some brilliant transfers. But what were your memories of the time of Martin O'Neill, who ended up being such a massive influence on your career? What were your memories of him joining the club and the differences he made right away, Stilly?
Oh, just to say that Martin have a completely different story than for Chris Sutton. Is that Celtic was the only choice.
Is that right?
That's why he made that move. And that, you know, he must be thankful to Martin O'Neill because he made that possible. But that was the only choice for him.
Lies from the off, eh?
Yes. He brought the winning mentality. Obviously, the previous years was very difficult. Yeah. I had to suffer in silence because for me it was really difficult to express myself. I couldn't speak English. Only help that I had myself is from Jackie, Matt Burchie, obviously Matt Viduka, who obviously Bulgarian and Serbian language is quite similar. So I could really understand the problems in the previous season. But what Martin O'Neill came with, he came with a passion and desire to win. He made sure that he built up the team to win and fight in every single competition.
So wasn't that there the previous season then? What was the culture like the previous season?
He wasn't there. It was a lot of problems in the dressing room. Obviously, I could only see from the side. Mm. I could only discuss it, even with my little English with Jackie and Matt Burchie, you know, what's actually is happening in the club.
But what there was friction, though, wasn't there?
Yeah, but what
Duke had said he was going to leave.
It was leadership. I think, to an example, I think one of Martin's first sessions, one of the lads, Stefan Mayhew, who could take the hump a little bit and just walk off of someone and tackle them, whereas previously maybe get away with it. You know, and just keep walking or going and get changes and get your stuff on. With Martin, just like, keep going, that'll cost you 2 weeks' wages. Mm-hmm. You just see Stefan turn around and lose his way back into training. Just little things there with discipline, respect, and I think leadership, communication. You know, I think that's where John Barnes really struggled. Mm-hmm. How he addressed the dressing room and then the players. We speak to individual players, but he wouldn't do it collectively and manage. The biggest thing with Martin, you know, as the game's changed over the years, he managed people. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where John didn't. I think that's where we struggled. And you have so many different characters and nationalities, everything.
But you talk about leadership, though. He signed leaders, didn't he? Obviously, Chris came in. Alan Thompson came in. Yeah. Neil Lennon joined partway through that first season as well. Didier Agat, for the price he cost, the value in that transfer. He shopped well, didn't he?
He did, and he got the best out of the other ones that were there. Yeah. You know, he changed so many. I think Stillian
was a chubby little right back, wasn't he?
He did call me on air a fat chubby.
Did he?
A lad, yeah. This
look how happy he is.
I can't hide it. He's the only person that I could not have a go at him as well. Yeah. But Jackie's talking about the leadership. If you look at Martin brought very strong characters.
Yeah.
Chris Sutton, Neil Lennon, Alan Thompson. Very difficult characters to control. I mean, he was mourning every day. He was the grumpiest player ever. You know, you see Jackie, you come calm in the morning, good morning. And you know what? You try to make comfortable for everyone in the room. He'll come in. Not even good morning.
It's funny because he's such a positive punch as well.
But when you start to understand Chris, this is the way he is. He actually challenges others.
Yeah.
He wants to see the reaction of others. He wants to see them not just challenge him on the field, but off the field, because that matter. And when we have those kind of players add to the team, we become stronger, because we all already had winners. We already had Jackie and Tom Boyd and Paul Wambert and Henrik Larsson.
And Henrik had just come back to fitness that season as well, hadn't he, season?
And Henrik kind of found out the good partnership in Chris Sutton, which made a huge difference.
And that partnership with Henrik, it clicked right from the start. I mean, what a season Henrik had. 53 goals he got that campaign just coming back from injury. But the very first league game of the season, I think, was Dundee United, and you both scored.
Yeah, I scored a brilliant goal from a yard to win the game for Celtic. It was actually an important goal for me because of what happened at Chelsea. We'd had a pretty good pre-season. I think I'd flown over to Denmark and we played a game in Germany. Was it against Leipzig?
Leipzig.
I think we played Leipzig. And I remember, because Henrik's quite a frosty character. I mean, I get on well with him now. Yeah. And I remember going and sitting and having a conversation with him, just saying, you know, I'm here for you, you know, I'll pass to you when I'm in, you know, I'm not any threat to you whatsoever. And from that day onwards, he was always brilliant. And, you know, the truth is Henrik was the big superstar within the dressing room. But the one thing about Henrik was such an unselfish player. And, you know, I think, you know, the boys know him extremely well, of course, as well, but so versatile, could play a number of positions. But I think, you know, coming back from a leg break, which he did do, and scoring that amount of goals. But it's interesting, the start of the season, you know, that one at Dundee United, really important to get off to a winning start, and Martin needed that. And then we just gradually built momentum. What I do think is really interesting, and what is exceptionally difficult, is for Martin to go into that environment. And normally, I don't know what the expectation was of the players and the Celtic fans at the start of the season, but with a gap so big, you'd think, well, just try and get closer.
Yeah.
Try and get closer. And I think that the supporters maybe would have accepted that.
Yeah.
But then player identification, and you know, talk about sort of the signings, Martin signed myself, Jos Valharen, Didier Rigat was an incredible signing. He was a centre forward for Hibs. All of a sudden, he ended up...
Took my position. Yeah.
Was he 30 grand as well? I think he cost 50.
You know, incredible. Yeah. And we haven't mentioned Johan Mialbi yet, who was a central midfielder. Yeah. And Martin had a wonderful eye for players. I mean, you know, Mialbi had gone to Celtic as a central midfielder, and he put him back in as centre back. And then Moravcik, you know, Jackie said Martin wasn't sure about him. Mm. And I always thought in pre-season, because Lubo, you know, he doesn't run a lot, does he? You know, he just doesn't. But I always thought, you know, he's off. Martin's not going to have him. Yeah. But Martin always, he looked throughout his management career, he always liked a maverick, and he eventually began to trust Lubo. And I mean, I'd never heard of Lubo.
He got some phenomenal performances out of Lubo that season as well. But we talk about the first game of the season being important. The first meeting, Martin O'Neill against the Rangers side, who had won the league by 21 points the season prior, finished 6-2 to Celtic.
What a game.
What a result.
What a result. And we can feel that season was going to be special for us, because if you remember the first day of Matt O'Neill, when he actually stood up in front of the fans, in front of the Celtic pad, promising what he's going to bring into the club, what kind of football he's gonna play, this is something that starts us off, because you've got a manager who wants to win. Mm. And this is, obviously in my situation, my first meeting with Matt O'Neill was, you either do it right or you don't play in my team. And this is the way the game against Rangers started. We knew that we have to put the right straight away. I mean, the game started perfectly for us. Chris tapped the ball. He was offside, to be honest. But, with the VAR these days, you know, he definitely can't.
Celtic getting a
decision. He'd lost half his goals.
Celtic getting a decision against Rangers.
This is where Chris was really right. Matt O'Neill had a great eye for the players and the quality of the players. I remember about Lubo Moravcik, first game, first friendly game, if you remember, Jackie, he played Lubo on the left. A winger.
He
was asking him to go up and down. Yeah. He was playing 3-5-2, up and down to chase people. And I remember at halftime, it was a long ball in the first half, and Lubo ducked in, he didn't head the ball. So Martin was in the dressing room, and he was passionate. He was going, Lubo, I want you to just go and head it. Just go and head it. So Lubo was looking at Martin. Mm. Martin finished talking, and Lubo just gave me a little nudge. Stan, I can't head the ball. That was his reaction. So actually, Lubo went to see Martin after the game, and I said, Gaffer, what I can do is I can make things happen in a final third. Give me that chance. So that day, Matt O'Neill told Lubo one thing. I don't want you to go on the fence. I want you to be in the final third and make things happen there for me. Because he realized who Lubo Moravcik is.
Yeah.
And this is something that not many managers will see. They'll try to fight it. Actually, he agreed with it in the first moment. And since then, I mean, Lubo was brilliant for us.
And on the 6-2 game as well, because we should talk a little bit more detail, he got his goal. I think Henrik scored one of his best goals ever in that match. But was that the day, psychologically, you thought, there's no stopping us this season?
Yeah, I mean, in fairness, Rangers were a good side. Even that game, it wasn't until late on you think the game's secure, because there's some good players in their team. But that was a turning point for everybody. I mean, even guys like Bob, I'm talking about Bobby Petter.
Yeah.
That's a game that made Bobby, Martin get the best out of him as well. Yeah. You know, I don't think Bobby's ever played a game like that in his life.
No. Bobby was so brilliant in the warm-ups. Every warm-up, he's like juggling and doing all these tricks, and then just sort of passing the ball most games, that go under his foot, out for a throw-in.
But you loved that game, didn't you?
Yeah, I did, and I do think that was the catalyst. But what Martin was good at all season is, I thought, and I don't know what the guys think, is taking the pressure off us, always saying Rangers are the benchmark. He didn't say anything silly. you know, always kept the pressure on Rangers because Rangers beat us 5-1 in November, and then Martin went out and got Neil Lennon, you know, who was a really important signing.
Little bit of stability.
I think in terms of the Celtic support, that was the game where there was real belief. And, you know, I said earlier, it's okay going into a club and, you know, Stan's quite right, you know, talking about having a winning mentality and having this belief. But it's actually, you have to then turn it into performances and doing that and setting a stall out and a team which had an identity, which we had, you know, had the three centre-halves. Jos Valhaeren was a brilliant signing. Yeah. I mean, especially that first season, I think I destroyed him psychologically because I roomed with him.
That was
the second season. He never came back as strongly, but he was a you know he was a terrific signing. And Martin, you know, found a way in a short space of time for us to be exceptionally effective. But that 6-2 game was the catalyst. And with Henrik's goal, I got an assist for that because had the ball not hit me in the belly and bounced back to him, he never would have dribbled around the three or four Rangers players and chipped Stefan Kloss. But then to go on, and we lost the game in November badly, and that may have given Rangers, you know, a bit of hope. But I think within the confines of the dressing room, we had Stan and Jackie mentioned the strong characters. I never felt, although it was a 5-1 walloping, we always felt we could, you know, we could recover and we were still in control. Yeah. I think the next game we played, we beat them 1-0. It's quite a tight game, but then, you know, once we beat them.
Sending off with Tomo in that game as well, wasn't it? The 5-1.
Well, was it the same? Yeah.
Tomo gets you were relentless in the end because you won the league by 15 points. You go on to the treble. So you found your rhythm again after that defeat in November. You obviously never lost any belief that day, Stillian.
We couldn't because Marty O'Neill balanced the team really well. Mm. He had some great partnerships around the team, and also everybody who's coming in and coming out, they fit very well. I mean, you could give Jackie could fit in a number of positions. Yeah. You know, he could play as a right back, he can play as a midfielder. And when somebody steps out, there is always somebody to take over there and to play even better. I mean, we talk about Henry Klassen and Chris Sutter. Mm. We talk about me, Paul Lambert, and Neil Lennon, and Jackie will come in sometime. That we had Alan Thompson and Didier Gatt. Jackie will fit in there. And they knew the strength of the people around them. And this is something important. You can never never lose a belief. We had the strength. We had the physicality. We had the speed. We had the football knowledge. When you have that kind of balance and togetherness, then it's very difficult to lose concentration and belief. This is why we kept going and we kept growing up and staying stronger.
Martin tells a story, you know, about Jackie, doesn't he? That, you know, at first he wasn't sure about Jackie. And then I think John Robertson, you know,
because Gaffer didn't come to training. Gaffer came in a Tuesday.
That was always the story, wasn't it?
He came in a Tuesday or a Friday, and the Tuesday was, he came out with like five poles and put poles down. You're like, oh, no. If you hadn't played in the Saturday, you knew you were going to be running with the goalies or Big Joe to do these ridiculous runs. And then Friday we would do young v old on a Friday, and the gaffer would referee and, you know, pick who the worst player was on the Friday. But, you know, I like to believe I trained and how I played.
Yeah.
Whereas I got on well with Robbo and Wally, and I'd go and see Martin. In fairness, I lost my position. I played the 6-2 game away with Scotland. I got injured away with Scotland. Mm. And he'd signed Didier Gatt as a striker.
Yeah.
Mm. And we were playing Sittmern at home, which I missed through the injury with Scotland. And then Didier played right wing back that game. And I was like, nice.
Not all right.
Just like, he just
well
found
played,
it.
Well played, Didier.
Delighted for you, mate. But no, and again, it is about the success of the team. Yeah. So I had to then wait and be patient and wait for an opportunity with another position. Mm-hmm. And for me, there was different turning points. I ended up playing in midfield more at the end of that season. The following season, it wasn't until later on, it went back to a back four. That, you know, we lost a few games to Rangers later in the previous, the later on seasons. And then he changed it back to a four, back to fullback.
I'm happy you mentioned John Robertson because obviously he was a big part of this story. I'll come back to John in just a moment. But before we get past this first season, I mean, he talks about his goals all the time, but you got a big one, didn't you?
To complete the treble.
Was it the Scottish Cup final? Yep. Was it the opener, wasn't it?
Yeah, I came on as sub for Liverpool. As I say, I don't know what the gaffer was thinking starting Logan before me, but
14 minutes he lasted. Like,
yeah,
we didn't know what he was thinking as well.
But no, it was a good moment personally because as a kid I was at Hibs as a young boy and they let me go for being too small, and so it was a good feeling.
So it was a get it up them moment.
Yeah, it was personally was I it was because I'd been there a number of years. My dad played there and to come on and score the opener in the final, which for me was, I didn't score many goals. I actually scored three in the run up in the Scottish Cup. I scored in the semi final. I scored one away in Stranraer, which Chris took great joy in because I celebrated scoring against Stranraer. You see me running and jump up. Again, it's more surprise when I score, so yeah. I ran away up and jumped up towards the select fans away doing it Stranraer away game.
It's a bit embarrassing, though.
I've always enjoyed when Jackie scored.
Shouldn't have mattered the opposition. So when we looked at the back, he was like, look at Jackie celebrating scoring against Stranraer. Well done.
Brilliant.
He took away my moment, so to get it in the cup final was...
You could celebrate then, and the opening goal, an important goal in the game. But what about John Robertson? What about his influence in all of you? And training as well, clearly, which he played a huge role in.
He was quality. He was just observing everything. He wasn't that. He only spoke with Chris because they were doing the crosswords. They would try to act smart, and they'll come in the morning and you'll get his glasses, and him and Sati would just chat something. John was just observing everything. He was making sure that he was telling the manager what's happening around the team, how everybody act, how is everybody's behaviour. Mm. I remember I've asked Robbo actually when we come closer and obviously we start winning and that. And I actually asked Robbo what was his role in the team, and he didn't speak to me for 3 months. He got really offended. I could never understand what he was doing because he was so quiet. He never, even in the meetings, you'd never say a word, but he always gonna be there. He always around. So for me, it was like, as a young, tried to be cheeky, and he didn't speak to me for 3 months. But John Robertson was brilliant. We all had incredible respect for him. We all knew at the end what was his role, what he was doing, what he was trying to achieve for the manager.
You know that feeling when you're about to score 30% off, but they want your number? Ugh. Give them your Line 2 number instead. It's a second line on your phone, perfect for nabbing promo codes without inviting spam to your party. Sign up for every discount under the sun, then block the junk texts that follow. You get all the perks, but none of the spammy baggage. More codes, less chaos. Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store and get your shopping sidekick today. Because the only thing blowing up your phone should be good deals.
BT Sport Pods. I think some young people might watch these podcasts and they might not appreciate how good a player John Robertson was. We're talking about one of the best wide players in the world in his time. And by the way, Martin O'Neill, never mind that, he'd actually won the European Cup twice under Brian Clough. And I think Brian, you know Martin very well these days, was a massive influence on his career, the way his managerial style developed, Chris.
Yeah, I think so. But I think, in fairness to, Brian Clough, one of the great managers, but Martin had done the hard yards.
He had.
As a manager, I'd played against his team. He was Wycombe Wanderers manager, had decent success there, and then he worked his way up the ladder
in Norwich
for about three weeks.
Yeah,
had a fall out. But Martin's his own man, he'd had an agreement with the chairman let him down, and he said, I'm off. And he did brilliantly with the Leicester City team, let's get it right. They were workmanlike, and he moulded them. I think he got them to a couple of League Cup finals, winning a League Cup.
Yeah.
And then, but then his stock was really rising. So him, making that decision to go north of the border was such a big deal.
Yeah. And on then to the next season, the 2001, 2002
season. We haven't talked about my drugs test at the Cup final.
I didn't know if you wanted to tell us that, but on you go.
Well, I'd played so well in the Cup final against Hibs, and I think I made Jackie's goal, or I was part of it. I got drugs tested after the game, and all the team went back to have the treble picture at Celtic Park, but they actually didn't wait for me. But I played so well because I think they assumed that the drugs testers had assumed that, blimey, if you play that well, you need a test. How can anybody be that good? And they left me out of the photo. So, you know,
they've got this lovely photo. At what point did you realise the photo would be? Did you see it on the wall?
That's really awful, isn't it? That's quite sad, really.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, oh, brilliant. Yeah.
I was wondering where he was in that picture. You remember that?
Wasn't worth waiting for, to be fair.
I wasn't there for the treble as well because I broke my leg.
Yeah.
Obviously, I was that special. The manager brought the medal and the cup to my house.
You were in the photo.
Did he brought the cup to you?
Yeah, they done it after the him and Peter Lolo.
But that's class, isn't it? And that says a lot about him.
That was incredible. And I didn't expect, obviously, they spoke with my wife and they said, we're going to bring his medal and the cup to him. Martin sat down for about an hour. We chatted. He was telling about how good was the boys. Didn't say anything about Chris. Talked about Hendrik a lot. Talked about Jackie's goal as well. But he's talking about John Robertson earlier.
Yeah.
You know what was the funny things about a lot of younger generation don't know about as a player? We used to play young v old. Mm. And Steve Watford and John Robertson will play. John Robertson will mimic people. Mm. They'll laugh at us. I remember one time, Bobo tackled John Robertson. John Robertson just stood up and just looked at him and said, "Gaffer." Gaffer went, "Play." That was John Robertson. Yeah. They were part of that. He was always around. He was.
Go and watch some videos of him. Anyone watch if they've not seen him.
Well, I was a Nottingham Forest fan. My wife was a Nottingham Forest fan, and she had John Robertson on her bedroom wall. But he scored a winning goal. Scored a winning goal in a European Cup. I didn't want to tell John that for obvious reasons.
All your teammates, clearly.
But no, he was a genius. And do you know what? His importance to Martin, I think, was so big. Because Martin was always aloof. Everybody was in fear of Martin within the dressing room, other than Hendrik. Everybody else was in fear of Martin. I think you have to have that as a manager, and you can't be too pally-pally. So John was the go-between between the players and Martin, and Steve Walford was the coach. Steve Walford took every session. You know, I'm sure they spoke and planned the sessions, and Martin always had total control. But I think, knowing John as well as I do, he was an important sounding board for Martin. And I think his part can't be underestimated because I think Martin trusted him because he had great football knowledge. And, you know, I think there are many times because we had quite a strong, we had a strong squad and there are always positions up for grabs. And I think he'd go to John and throw things at him and John would give his opinion and, you know, Martin would always have the final decision. But the only time I can ever remember sort of a moment of doubt ever is Martin in a post-match interview when he was at Sunderland. And Sunderland was the only club which he didn't take John in with him. And I thought, you know, that was a, you know, pretty big thing.
Yeah.
I saw, you know, maybe a bit of doubt in Martin's eyes. And I always thought that about, you know, Martin didn't take John to Sunderland. Well, not, I don't know, you know, what actually happened or how it materialised, but John didn't go with Martin to Sunderland. Mm-hmm. And I always thought, you know, maybe that was why things panned out at that particular club as they did.
And just to be clear, because we should ask, was that what sealed the deal with your wife when you saw Robbo in the wall?
Well, no, I wasn't with her at that time.
Oh, right, actually. Okay, that was later. Yeah. That was later.
That was,
okay.
Yeah, that would be quite
odd. I thought it would be a bit weird if she still had John in the wall.
40-year-old.
We've cleared that earlier. That was the only option for Chris. The manager clears it quite well.
Yeah, great, right. Right, so onwards to the next season then. One of the first things Martin did was bring in another striker. John Hartson arrived.
Yeah.
What were your
big
what were your thoughts at that point?
Proper striker.
Yeah. Proper striker. Never a problem because John was a brilliant finisher. You know, the truth is, you know, you work your way up into the game. There's always competition for places. And, you know, now I think it's viewed that you need, I know clubs now play with predominantly one striker, but you need to have strength in depth. And I'd had a few injuries within the first season, so Martin wanted to have that strength in
depth.
Did
it make you better? Did you think, right, well, hold on a second here, they're bringing in someone else? Is that the mindset right away?
No, it is what it is. There's always pecking orders. I think competition is a good thing and it's a healthy thing and it, you know, keeps you on your toes. Mm. I mean, my initial reaction was, you know, I suppose I thought, would I play this competition for places? But, you know, I was quite versatile as well and, you know, could play a number of different roles and that's the way it panned out.
Centre half. midfield the odd game.
I was just going to say, mate, Chris, better centre half, better midfielder. No, but what was really good, it's about fitting in the right place.
Yeah.
I mean, it was really difficult for Chris. John came and he did not complain. You know, I know he went through different injuries, but I mentioned before about Jackie, but Chris, he never complained. He filled in as a number 10, as a number 8, as a number 6, as a centre-back. He never complained. But we knew one thing. When him and Henrik got up there, we knew what to expect. We knew how important he was. He never complained. And this is something that not many teams can afford. Not many teams have the luxury.
He's changed now, though.
He definitely changed now. He definitely changed now. But having Henrik Larsson, Chris Sutton and John Hartson in one team, I mean, you always bet to win.
And John scored 24 goals that season, by the way. The first didn't come till October. I think it was a hat-trick against Dundee United.
You had to be patient as well.
And he
because,
kicked on.
Yeah, I mean, when we first came, Martin put him in with me to room with me.
What was he like as a room?
There's got to be some stories here.
It would need to be after dark for the stories with John. He was a character, but a great big bloke.
Yeah, and he's a great guy.
He was patient to start with because, say, Chris and Henrik were on fire, and he had to wait his chance. And then Martin put him in, and then his goal return is phenomenal.
It was, and that first season as well, the goal difference, by the way, you finished with was +61. You won the league by 15 points again, and I think the biggest development maybe Martin's second season in the Champions League. First time the club had made the group stages.
Yeah.
You did it in style against Ajax.
Yeah, it was. Fantastic. The away game was we were excellent. Mm. The home game was more nervy because we lost the goal.
Yeah.
It was
a
long night, but we'd done the hard work away from home. It was a fantastic performance. Mm.
That was huge for the club, wasn't it, to make that next step? And probably for you guys as well, to see yourself performing on that stage that season in the Champions League.
Yeah, especially the first game against Ajax. Obviously, I was still recovering from injury, so I travelled with the team and I actually watched the boys. I mean, the third goal, Chris header from Didier's cross. This is when you see that we belong with the big ones. We belong at the Champions League because we deserve to be there. And you know what? We were so unlucky. This is something that we probably all regret, that we never made it to that group stages. Because
the knockout stages?
Yes, we had the team and the quality to do it. Just little details that...
Well, you were close, because I think you got 9 points.
9 points.
Just behind Porto, Juventus were in that group as well.
Yeah, one of our home games. Normally that would get you a good chance of getting through, but a bit unfortunate.
Yeah.
And if people forget the first season, I think we got knocked out by Bordeaux, you know, because of what happened and the treble. I suppose that was glossed over, but forgotten about. Mm. But then, I mean, the Ajax game was important. Jackie's right, the second game. I mean, we sort of knew what we had to do.
That's the score.
The first half, I mean, the first half, we actually, you know, we got deep, we got nervous, and then I think we got a little bit more comfortable second half. Yeah. Once we actually went a goal down, we started to play. But that, you know, that was huge then. And then the catalyst, and we went away to Juventus, didn't we? And we had some dodgy decisions as a club over the years, Daryl, against many teams. But there was Martin and Neil went berserk, didn't he? That was the.
Something like that.
Jos Valharen, we ended up losing 3-2. Mm. But our home record in the Champions League and European football was phenomenal. Really, really phenomenal. I think we only lost once in Martin's reign at home, and that was when Henrik, of all people, came back.
The home record and across three seasons at one point. Yes. You were unstoppable domestically as well.
Yeah. And I don't know what the guys think, but I always thought, because of the belief which we'd built up, and you know, we had an understanding, we had a way of playing, good relationship on and off the field. But standing in a tunnel, I don't think there was any team which would really phase us. Mm-hmm. We knew we could lose a game, of course you could, but you look down the tunnel, you think Larsson, Albi, Petrov, McNamara, you know, Lennon, Thompson. You know, Baldy when he came, you trusted each other. Lambert, absolutely, and you play at a level, and then you feed off the atmosphere within the stadium. And we had some big wins against some good good teams, especially at Celtic Park. But Stan's right, the away record, I think we'd all sit there now and say, that would be the one disappointment.
Yeah. It was still a great season overall, though. And I think it laid the foundations for what was to come the following season, which, of course, in the 2002-2003 season, ended in that amazing final in Seville. What a UEFA Cup run that was, Stilly.
It was something that you don't describe every day, because you go through emotions, you go through different performances, you go through different challenges. I mean, we had two games against Blackburn and Liverpool. Yeah. They were written for us, because, I mean, I remember Chris and Tomo regarding, you know, when we played Liverpool and Blackburn, you can see the adrenaline, you can see the emotions when we played the English teams. Mm. They were ready. Mm. They just wanted to win. And they just carried everybody else with them. I mean, the quads between men's versus boys and, you know, little things, we didn't like that. We didn't like people to disrespect us. We wanted people to understand who we are, what we stand for, and how hard we work to achieve these things. Mm. When those kind of quotes come in, it was easier for us just to go through it.
Interesting you mentioned the Blackburn game, actually, because after the first leg, which was at Celtic Park, wasn't it? Graeme Souness, at the time their manager, came out and made some comments after the game. I think he did say it was men against boys. Thoroughly believed that back in England, they would do the job and some.
Yeah, I mean, watching the game, Blackburn were a good side as well. It was right throughout their team. They played really well in the night. But we knew, you know, the way, how crucial the away goals were.
Yeah.
You know, they had a lot of possession, a lot of stuff there. And knowing going down to Blackburn, the guys that we've got would score goals. Yeah. We knew we could score away from home and get the away goal. And that's what got us there. And it played into our hands as soon as said that right away, because we knew we can play better.
Yeah.
You know, the way the game went.
I don't think his comments, I don't think it was one where we pinned his comments up on the dressing room wall.
But you took note of them.
We had a good dressing room anyway. We knew we hadn't played that well. Gary Flitcroft as well. I played with Gary at Blackburn, you know, said the thing. I don't know whether Souness said it because of the Rangers connection and, you know, a throwaway line. What we do know is it was a really daft thing to say. And he should have known better, because he had a massive dollop of egg on his face. Wow. You know, at the end, the tie wasn't over. And it was disrespectful. And, you know, I'm English, but I always thought that, you know, when we drew Blackburn and the games against Liverpool, they're really important for Celtic and for Scottish football, because you can't get away from the fact that the way that Scottish football is viewed from down south. Mm. And, you know, a lot of people, you know, have Mickey Moused it off over the years. So that was a nice sort of two fingers up, and I played for Blackburn.
Going back to your old team, scoring in that second, like Henrik scored as well.
You know, it's always interesting, because there is this sort of perception that, that I think has evolved under Martin, that, you know, Martin tactically at times could be found out. Yeah. Well, that particular game was when, so what happened in the first game is his two guy, the Rangers player, sort of ran the midfield and they played well. They actually didn't create a lot of chances. Yeah. Henrik scored late on from close range with 1-1-0. Hear all the comments, but we go down. But that particular game, you know, Martin said, you know, we've got to stop two guy from playing. So so we did. Mm. And that was actually, you know, such an important thing. And then going on to Liverpool, there were a couple of early goals in that game, wasn't it? Henrik scored early, I think, within a minute. Yeah. And Bobo Baldi broke my wrist against Rangers. I went up for a header and shouted Chris's ball, because my name's Chris Darrell. And Bobo went up as well, and I put my arm down and with the wrist snapped. So I missed that game.
He missed it at Anfield.
And I remember watching it on the television. Do you know what? I was one of those going into it. It's not that I didn't fancy Celtic, but that was a massive win.
Yeah.
That was an enormous win, and Alan Thompson, you know, he says he meant the free kick. What a load of nonsense. Where he went under the wall, and John Hartson's goal that day is one of the, you know, greatest goals I think you'd see in, you know, Europe from a Celtic player. It was a brilliant goal, and another massive statement.
Yeah.
We used to go down to the like QPR and Fulham and wipe the floor with them every season, didn't we, before flying off to America, get a bit of confidence from the English teams. But to actually beat them in proper competition was a big deal.
You know that feeling when you're about to score 30% off, but they want your number? Ugh. Give them your Line 2 number instead. It's a second line on your phone, perfect for nabbing promo codes without inviting spam to your party. Sign up for every discount under the sun, then block the junk texts that follow. You get all the perks, but none of the spammy baggage. More codes, less chaos. Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store and get your shopping sidekick today. Because the only thing blowing up your phone should be good deals.
BT Sport Pods. And even after Blackburn, by the way, let's not forget some other rounds that were close and decided. But a good team as you were playing, Celta Vigo, you defeated them. Stuttgart as well.
Celta Vigo was the first time Celtic had qualified for Europe after Christmas, like 22, 23 years. That's a big deal.
And Celta Vigo was really difficult, but for me, the big one was Stuttgart. Yeah. Obviously, at that time, the captain of Stuttgart was Balakov.
Yeah.
Oh, he's my idol in Bulgaria. Look, he's laughing in there. he was my idol, and obviously when he retired, he's given me the captaincy from himself to me. And it was a big deal for me. Mm. It was really important, you know, for me to play well, the Celtic to win, and to make sure we continue our journey.
You scored with the cross.
Yeah, you did. I was getting to that. I didn't want to forget this game.
It was a great goal, to be honest.
Meant it all the way.
I did. Sean? You can see in the video that I had a little look and just managed to find a little gap there. But it's okay. Yeah. What I want to say we mentioned Blackburn, Liverpool, Celta Vigo, Stuttgart, so every single one of us had a reason to prove something through that journey. Through that journey, we had moments that we had to stand up, we had to be counted, not just as a team, as individuals as well. So he kind of written out to take us to obviously Seville.
Well, it was 5-4 against Stuttgart, wasn't it?
The Stuttgart game, as you said, when Martin with the team, you didn't know if you were playing or not, or where you were playing, you just call it your... In the Stuttgart game...
Henrik was out, wasn't he?
He was out, and he named the team, and obviously I'm in the starting 11, not obviously, but I was surprised. I was in the starting 11. And I was just like, where am I playing? And I was looking at the team, the shape and everything I got. I was left centre half. So if you're not playing, you're just, right, you're in. Yeah. Mm. And there was no way you could just have maybe not play for 4 or 5 weeks and then just come in, and you knew you had to do a good job or you'd be out for... Yeah.
But that's trust, isn't it?
For a big game like that.
It's interesting he didn't discuss it with you beforehand when the team was named.
Exactly. He just... He knew that obviously you can do the job and he expects you to do it. Mm. But left centre half was a new one.
I used to like that.
Only few players had the privilege to be closer to the manager and to know when they're playing and not. Me and Jackie would know. We would wait.
Did you used to like that, the fact that you didn't know the team before? I mean, I used to like that. I think it keeps everybody on their toes, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does, aye. It does. Yeah, it's not great when you're on the side, though.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say.
You're prepared and you're there and you're just like, you know. Oh, you didn't have that too much, but I had it quite a bit for that first sort of season and a half.
But what we got is that his meetings were very short, very sharp, very quick. He won't overload you with any information. It won't be too much. Mm. He will know that when he put you in that position, we'll just ask ourselves questions. Like Jack said, what are we playing? So we'll go to Steve Ford, who's like, Wally, what are we playing? And he was go, you know what to do, you're playing on the left. And then that's the way he goes.
Right.
It didn't complicate anything going forward.
You scored in Germany as well, I think.
Yeah, from a yard. There's a lot of my goals from a yard. Didier Agat. Yeah,
they're good ones.
We went 2-0 up, and we actually, not we had a wobble, but, you know, they were...
They were a wobble later on. Lenny passed it back for the centre after they scored. Yeah. It was a long few minutes to the final whistle.
It was.
Again, you went through side.
And you've mentioned the Liverpool game already. I think Neil Lennon said a few years ago that at Anfield there was an amazing speech. Is that right, from Martin ahead of that game? Denny, you remember that?
I can't remember.
I think the gaffer had a lot of them, and I couldn't. Same with Seville. Yeah. That was what he was great at.
Yeah.
But I couldn't tell you what he said, what he done. But you always were out to start like 10 feet tall, didn't you? Mm. He was brilliant. Yeah. That was what his really strong point.
Mm. I think that was an enormous thing as a player. Martin didn't praise you very often, didn't praise me very often, didn't praise the guys very often. But when he did, you know, I think it was a big thing. And he had a, you know, he had a marvellous way of making the players eat out of his hands. Yeah. And he had the supporters, everybody at the club, I think, pulling in the you know, in one direction, in the right direction. But as a player, when Martin praised you, and I can't ever really remember another manager, I played under some good managers like the other guys, but actually, you know, when Martin gave you a little nod or a wink or whatever, thinking, blimey, you know, that I must have done okay.
Yeah. I think Neil Lennon's quote was he had the ability to make you feel 100 feet tall or 1 inch tall in the way he dealt with you. If you'd done something wrong, you knew about it.
Yeah, and I think at times he could be pretty brutal, but always.
Was that the club side of him, maybe?
Yeah, but I don't know what the guys think, and you know, people will talk about the game changing, and is there any need for that? I never used to personally mind him coming for me if I knew I hadn't played badly. I think most players are honest. There are some players who aren't honest, but if somebody comes for you and you've had a poor performance, the best thing you can do is sit there, get your head down, and shut up. But there were occasions, I think, when the odd player chipped back at Martin, Henrik, and they had a little set to it.
I want to hear about this story, but go on, you were going to say something about that quote I just said, that ability Martin had to make you feel the highs and lows.
It's just like I said earlier, it was managing people.
Yeah.
You know, he knew how to manage people. If one of the players was speaking to the manager, because, as Chris said, he was a little bit aloof, you know, it was just like the gaffer's boy talking to his dad, and, oh, dad, you know. I always remember in the changing room, Stirling one day has pulled me and says, come here, and Chris is standing in the shower, like, looking down, facing us, and Martin's standing talking to him in the shower, and he's standing there washing himself. I mean, Stirling's looking around like two wee boys going, oh, gaffer, you know, making faces behind his back. Dad, you know. And Chris said, gaffer, Stirling and Jackie's making faces.
Oh, you didn't, did you?
Stuck us in it. He stuck, and the two of us like that. Two of us looked at each other and dived into the toilet, hiding like two wee boys till the shadow walked past the toilet.
Really, really.
What, so snitch.
What about the one time months. Then? The one time that he had to go at Henrik.
Yeah, that was unfortunate. But what was interesting
was it Tannadice?
Yeah, Tannadice. So, yeah. I mean, Henrik used to bail us out every week. I mean, we used to come in after games saying, "Didn't we play well, guys?" And Henrik had scored three. We'd won 3-0. But then, so Henrik hadn't had a particularly good first half.
Yeah.
It was a shock, I think, to everybody, really, because, you know, everybody used to get panned occasionally. But
I seem to remember
Henrik.
It wasn't that bad a first half, though. Not so much, you might have gone after him.
Breaking off him a wee bit. And
talking about his hold up play,
like,
wasn't it?
Henrik, you get a hold of the effing ball.
And then it sort of escalated.
How did Henrik take it?
Henrik told him in a polite way to leave him alone. And then Martin didn't take to that. But all the players were like nudging each other. We were so excited, just looking around the room.
I think Martin had said before, actually, in one of his interviews, what he hated was when he did have a go at Henrik that day, he'd turn around and he'd speak to Johan in Swedish or something. And that really upset him because he had no idea what it was.
You can only imagine what he was saying in Swedish. Martin needed a Swedish dictionary, really.
He did.
You could see Henrik's eyebrows when he saw Henrik get a hold of the ball. Henrik was just like, you knew what was coming. I didn't play that game.
No.
He actually banned me playing that game because a friend of mine ran a story that Celtic won't offer me a new contract, and I think Martin knew about that, and he took me there. Never played me, so I was on the side watching.
A little message.
I can't remember that.
A strong message,
that obviously still rankles for you to bring up 20 years later.
I was looking for a big contract, Chris, that's why.
So much so he followed Martin Aston Villa.
he didn't take me there. Yeah. He did not put me on the bench, so I was just standing on the side, so I was looking at it, and I was looking at Henrik's face. It was hilarious. I was just giggling at his head. Listen, Martin was, he knew his boundaries, he knew who is who. Henrik had a great respect, not just to the manager and from the manager, from us as well. I mean, I found it very difficult to speak with Henrik.
On the day of games,
I'll speak with Chris because he'll just mumble me. He'll just tell we'll get beat 5-0 and we have. Like, I remember we went one day and he say, "Let's see how many coffees we can get before the game." Honestly, I had 5 coffees. I could not stop shaking for 3 days. His idea before the game. It was this is Chris. This is how he brings you in. We used to always sit for a coffee before the games. You always get together. We'll sit down. Mm. We have a chat. John Robertson used to come and said, "We get beat 10-0 today."
He used to get
up and leave. He won't even see
every time. Right. But John, you eventually got anxious if I didn't say we'd lose. I said I got a bad feeling about
every game,
and eventually you got anxious if I didn't say we'd lose. Yeah. There's reverse psychology.
Yeah, Just going back to the European run, of course, because Boavista in the semis negotiated that well. Hendrick scored home and away, I think.
Well, we didn't negotiate that well.
No, you did, because you made the final.
Well, we negotiated it, but I wouldn't say. But
you got through.
But there's only, I mean, it's an easy thing to say now, but there's only Hendrick who could have scored that goal. I mean, the way I still don't know how he did that. Mm. He sort of dug it out with his little scoop. It was like a scoop, wasn't it?
Yeah, just no quick. Backward. Yeah.
I mean, and that was, I think there was about 15 minutes left then.
Was it less? Yeah. That was
totally the end, eh? We were under pressure. Mm. That game, we were defending with our lives. That game, we didn't really create anything.
Mm.
You know what? We always had that hope that having players that we've got, you know, with ability to score goals, to make something from nothing, that give us belief to keep fighting and
stay in the game.
This is what happened. We actually battled. We were all over the place. We were just defending. We were scrapping. Probably that was the best game for Rab, to be honest. It was brilliant at that game. It was brilliant. I can't say many things like that, for example, Rab, but he was brilliant against Boavista because he made some incredible save. He kept us in the game, and we managed to get that little chance. And
it was a bad draw, really, for us. Not a bad draw. It was a good draw.
You won the game.
Yeah, but the reason I say that is because of expectation. Because we'd beaten Liverpool, Blackburn, Stuttgart, Celta Vigo, you know, good teams, and then you get Boavista, and the expectation was, you know, Celtic are going to get there.
But then the final. I mean, what a day in Seville with all the fans going over there. Henrik Larsson has actually done one of the podcasts, by the way, the Champions League series, and he actually said his biggest regret of his football career, though, was not going the distance in winning that game. It was a great occasion. You went close, but just not, you couldn't get over the line, Jackie.
Yeah, it's not a game I've watched back. I think, I think the goals we lost that night were poor, especially early on. We get ourselves back into it. You know, Henrik scored 2 fantastic goals. Yeah. And the turning point, obviously, when Bobo gets sent off, I thought it was kind of swung back round at that point. You know, I thought we were coming back on top in extra time. But
they were a great team. Mourinho again, in charge, all the players they had.
That's not a consolation, though, is it?
No. But do you agree with Henrik? Would you go along with that? Was that one of the biggest disappointments?
Yeah, it's up there. Europe. Obviously, as a footballer, you want to be a part of history. Yeah. You want to have moments there and winning big trophies, and that would have been a great moment for us, and personally and collectively. Mm. But it was a sore one.
Stilly?
Yes, it was. I always say I think it was the hardest moment. We were so close. You know what was the difficult one when we were passing through the trophy and you knew you could take it. It was just a little margin that details, you know, sending off and a few minutes away from, you know, going to penalties. You never know. I thought we had them, you know, going back into the game with the heat. But the journey, you know, we can never forget it, but it's still painful inside about not getting there, not winning it, not being able to lift that trophy. This will always remain in our memories.
Chris?
Yeah, the same. I mean, that would be the biggest disappointment because you get so, so close. Mm. I mean, with regards to Henrik, you feel for Henrik because, you know, his performance, the goals he scored that day were absolutely phenomenal. He had, you know, ended up having 7 years at Celtic, had given so much to the club. That would have been really fitting. I think Martin O'Neill, he often used to say, last words leaving the dressing room, don't let the game pass you by. Mm. And I think that most of us, if not all of us, would feel, you know, not just a tinge, but more than that, that was, you know, a moment. Because at the football club, and it's a different competition, but everybody is aspiring to get up to the level of the Lisbon Lions. You know, they set the benchmark and they set the standards. you know, I think people, a lot of people, it's not necessarily for me to say, but look at Martin O'Neill's team and would say, you know, after the Lisbon Lions, they were the next team who put Celtic back on the map, and that, you know, those O'Neill years. And, you know, I even think you're looking forward to today and, you know, the current manager, Ange Postecoglou. I don't think that the last 20 years, any of it would have been possible without Martin O'Neill actually moving north of the border and taking over at Celtic.
He rebuilt the club at that time. You didn't go on to win the league that season. It was a painful end. Goal difference, you lost. The Dunfermline quotes afterwards, Chris?
Yes. There were some comments.
Look, they're brought up, you know, from time to time by me and a few other people with you on TV. But in all seriousness, how do you look back on that interview afterwards and what you said? I mean, clearly it was still painful after, you know, the way the season had finished. It was obviously a difficult end. It promised so much.
Yeah, honestly, I don't. I look back and I don't care. It's what I felt in the moment. It's what I think a lot of us felt. Should I have said it?
Did you really believe it?
Did I believe? Yes, I did believe it. Do I believe it today? Don't know. But it didn't sit right. I can't lie. I can't sit there and lie to you. That's the way I felt. That's the way a lot of people felt. Unfortunately, I was the one who went out and did the interview, and I got sent off by Kenny Clark, was the referee, who'd had a bad game. And he walked out to do his warm down. I swore at him, called him every name under the sun. He sent me off. He said, "That's a red card." And then I was still waiting to do the interview on the way back in, and I called him every name under the sun again. And so that was two red cards. And then I did the interview, which, you know, didn't go down very well. And but I, of course, I had the backing of my teammates,
clearly,
within the dressing room. And, you know, I think a lot of us all felt the same way. And then the next day I was getting all sorts of calls and legal actions threatened, but I had the backing of my teammates, but I didn't hear from my teammates.
No one.
But you know what? It's what I felt, and there's a lot made of sort of, you know, interviews after games and should players be interviewed. That was what I felt. It was, you know, it was authentic. I honestly don't care what anybody, you know, we're a long time on. I don't care what people think. That's what I felt.
You don't regret it?
No,
yeah,
I don't.
And also after, you know, we lost the UEFA, you know, we lost the league. It's about emotion. People get stuck into this kind of comments. Sometimes you say things and, you know, people try to do a different thing. What I always believe is, like, we could have done it better. We could have scored more goals. And that year, both teams were good. We were good. Rangers were good. So both teams won by 5 goals, by 6 goals. You always expect those teams, Celtic and Rangers, us and them, to score goals.
Yeah.
And we had the opportunity. Mm. You know, we could have even scored more. We had so many chances. But yeah, I'll back up Chris. You know, this is in a moment that you just disgusting and you say things. Is he wrong? No, he's not. It's just frustration.
That feeling, though,
he don't like to lose.
That feeling, though, that you had after that game, after losing the league, I just wonder how much it fired you all up, those comments as well. Because next season, the key was to get the title back.
Yeah.
You did it in some style. In fact, you could have gone through that next season undefeated.
Yeah, I think at that moment, as you said, to lose the league, any other league, we would have won it.
Yeah.
You know, to lose it in goal difference, head to head, we would have won, you know, English Premier League, we would have won it.
Yeah.
And to be interviewed right after it, at the end of the season, and we were told the week before, the players, you know, that people at Dunfermline saying if they need an extra goal, they'll get it. And that sort of filtered back to our dressing room. So that's why we had it in our minds. Mm-hmm. And that's why, well, Chris said what he said, we all felt it. Maybe if one of us was doing the same interview, I said the same, because...
Just as Billy, you were.
Yeah, exactly.
The trouble he got.
Just happened to be Chris.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's not that you're questioning certain things there, it's the emotion there at that point. Mm-hmm. And it's what you, as Chris said, it's what you think and it's what you've been told, you know, is happening. And and that's what happened in the game. Yeah. So, and for the obviously disappointing for you losing to not come away with anything that season. But in fairness, I wouldn't change anything. See the whole UEFA Cup run.
You put so much into that.
Yeah, put so much into it. To come away with nothing that season, no silverware, But the memories and everything else, I wouldn't change anything.
The next season was spectacular, though. You did the double, I think, that next season. And as I just said, I think you lost a couple of games late in the season when it was all but done anyway. You could have gone, you could have been an invincible side that season on league terms. It was incredible, that campaign.
You know, the funny thing is, losing the UEFA final, losing the league, we could not wait to start the next season.
Yeah.
We could not wait. That was us. That was us.
You,
we
you going into it as well. It was Henrik's last season, didn't
straight
you?
Away. Yeah. Straight from the pre-season, we knew what was happening. You could see straight away everybody's up for it. The pre-season was good. We were working really hard. You know what? Martin already knew that we're going back into the tempo again, and we never looked back. We just could not wait to start, and we just went and done it in style.
Yeah, I think you got 28 goals that season. You made the group stages again in the Champions League, I'm pretty sure, and you did do the double. Barcelona was that season as well. You knocked out Barcelona after going back into the UEFA Cup.
That's when Neil Lennon walked up the tunnel in the Nou Camp and was screaming at Ronaldinho that he's not so good now. I don't know if Ronaldinho would have made of that, actually. But that was Neil, wasn't it? He was a great share of dressing room with a fiery character. I mean, you mentioned the Stuttgart game.
Yes.
So he used to come over. He used to after games, I had Balakov in my pocket.
finished his career the night before. That was his number one. He finished a few.
He used to say to me, I've got another Bulgarian legend in my I've got you in training every day. Now I've got Balakov as well. That's what he's... quads.
Yeah, but you'll remember that. Well, you started home and away, I think. I don't think you played in one of them. Was it the home game?
The home game
you didn't
play.
But the away game was difficult because you were without some really important players in that game. Was that the game that David Marshall was drafted in as well to play? Was that young John Kennedy?
Rab would have been suspended, wouldn't he?
Rab been sent off in the first game.
Yeah.
When Bobo decided to retaliate
first.
Ray Motta. But
what a display away from home.
It was.
You mean defensive display?
Defensive, well, even at home.
Because 1-0 wasn't at the end of the two times.
Saviola gets sent off as well in the first game.
Yeah.
And then Morta and Big Rab get sent off.
The best display was in the tunnel with Bobo. Bobo was knocking.
What happened?
He was knocking the hell out of everyone.
Before
that
or after?
That was a half-time. That was when all
It was a melee at half-time. So if anybody had caught... If Bobo went up for a header or someone would catch him or caught him or burst his lip, you knew they were going to get whacked in the tunnel or whenever he could get a chance to get them back. So he picked his moment at half time and he goes for Motta and all hell broke loose and we all eventually get into the dressing rooms and the referees come into our dressing room and shouted the captain. So I went through it in the referees room and it was Puyol and he's starting. Says Barcelona number four, red card off. And he turned to me and went Celtic number 20. I'm thinking Bobo's number six. Who's 20? I couldn't honestly think who number 20 was because I thought Rab was number one. So I was like, so I walked back through and Martin's standing at the tactics board and he's like, what? So I'm looking around the numbers. I was like, Rab, you're off. And he goes like, Matt, I was like, what? I said, he sent Rab off. With Bobo doing that, it really kick-started David Marshall's career. He came in at half-time, Big Rab get, although Martin talks about it, he was talking about it the other week, but he said that they're, you know, it was tactical. Say it was Rab. We'll sacrifice Rab. That kickstarted.
But another massive victory against Barcelona. I know you went out in the quarters Villarreal that season, but it was a great campaign because you'd done the double, won the league back as well, and that was the season 5 out of 5 against Rangers.
I don't like to talk about my.
Well, you like to talk about the last one of those five, don't you?
I don't like to.
But that was huge, though. Again, wasn't it? We're talking about one-upmanship in the city of Glasgow and everything else. That amidst everything you talk about in the Martin O'Neill years, Celtic fans will still say the whitewash.
Yeah, I think, and just touching on the start of the season, and you know the previous season being trophyless, and the reaction. I don't think that we necessarily talk. I don't think we did talk about it.
On a personal level, you wanted to go and think, right?
But we knew he had a good dressing room. Yeah. I mean, you know, you mentioned, you think of the, you know, the dressing room and strong characters. Mm. You know, it's quite some odd characters within the dressing room, but some strong characters. You know, the Scandinavians, Larsson and Mjällby, were ferocious. Mm. You know, well, I mean, you couldn't speak to them before. You know, I wouldn't want to speak to Henrik and Johan before going, because they'd want to rip your head off. And a lot of the other guys were, you know, were far more mellow. John Hartson was a nutcase, wasn't he? If you lit the right fuse, you know, he was so difficult to handle on his day. Bobo was uncontrollable. And that, you know, Neil Lennon was a motor mouth within the dressing room, but a good one.
Yeah.
And you needed these characters. And somehow, within the sort of madness of the dressing room, we all sort of understood each other. And you find a way of, you know, the team goes out on the pitch, but you wouldn't change that particular dressing room. Yeah. I mean, I always thought when Craig Bellamy came into the club, he came in with a big reputation. You didn't. Barely heard a word from him, Craig Bellamy.
You know that feeling when you're about to score 30% off, but they want your number? Ugh. Give them your Line 2 number instead. It's a second line on your phone, perfect for nabbing promo codes without inviting spam to your party. Sign up for every discount under the sun, then block the junk texts that follow. You get all the perks, but none of the spammy baggage. More codes, less chaos. Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store and get your shopping sidekick today. Because the only thing blowing up your phone should be good deals.
BT Sport Pods. The last game against Rangers, how you did it in the end.
Well, I don't want to talk about this every week
in the telly. It was a big goal, wasn't it? On reflection now, because it's part of this story, Chris.
It was one of the great Glasgow derby goals, Darrell, where I leapt like a salmon. 92 minutes on the clock, and I flicked the ball on to Henrik, who laid the ball back into my path. And I was thinking at the time, you wouldn't know this because you've not played sport at high level, but you have these little pictures in your head. And I was thinking, Chris, can you dribble around three or four Rangers defenders and stick it in the back of the net? And then I thought, no, you're not capable of that. Went shoulder to shoulder with Frank de Boer, and it was about 25 yards out, and just chipped Stefan Kloss instead. And it was unusual for me because I meant it. Mm-hmm.
Just to be clear, a minute ago, he didn't want to talk about that a minute ago. Look at, and you'd get there in the end.
Yeah. No, so, that, no, it was, great, it was and, goal. And it was.
An iconic goal, actually, now.
It's because of what it meant. In terms of bragging rights, but honestly, I mean, all the games against Rangers were big, but, I mean, and that, you know, that season is viewed as the green and whitewash, but if you were to compare that game to the 6-2 game, you can't compare them. The 6-2 game, you know, changed the mentality and gave Celtic a belief, which the last 20 years, you know, I think it's pretty much carried on.
Mm. After Seville as well, he changed the shape. Mm. You know, that season there, we lost a couple of games to Rangers. They put a 4-3, and he went back to a 4 after that. Right. You know, and we won 5 in the bounce, but he changed, went back to about a 4-3-3. Or a 4-4-2 and changed it away from your three centre backs that full season. So he adapted and decided to change it, and it worked again.
Into Martin's last season, then you didn't win the league that year. It went down to the final day again. But what memories do you have of that? I know it was a season where Martin put his family first.
Well, I'm just glad I just survived that season. You know, we had a difficult end of the season. You know, I had to go through a fight with Bobo Baldi. I'm just glad to be alive. You know, I'm just glad that the boys really backed me up and really helped me. You know, survive and be here. You know, talk about this.
Tell us, please.
Who sparked that?
Lenny. Oh well, it was Lenny. Who else? That bubbly little man that we talk about. Obviously, we win against Rangers. 5 points ahead. 3 games to go. We play Hibernia at home. We lose the game, and through the game, obviously, me and Neil Lennon is having a go at Bobo. He made the mistake for the goal. We keep telling him things that Bobo, for God's sake, just clear the ball. Don't do stuff that you can.
There's a collective responsibility.
Just, you know, everybody's like chipping to Bobo, but me and Neil was about to keep going and shut up and shut up. So, obviously, the game finished. I stayed out there clapping the fans, Neil Lennon already in the dressing room and having a pop at Bobo. You know, Bobo, we told you, clear the ball, don't take risks, important game for us. We were in the game, we were winning. And Bobo kept telling Lenny to shut up, and young Stan walks in, runs in. The first thing he goes is, for God's sake, well, I was a bit more aggressive. All of a sudden, Bobo just jump in. Bobo jumps. I mean, Bobo is a big guy.
He's a big guy.
You think Chris is a big guy? No, he's not. Bobo is a big guy. He carries everyone with him. So first thing that who tried to stop him is John Robertson. He just pushed, just not even with a with his palm, with his finger, just pushed Robbo over the massage bed. Everybody else walks, just moves away. Chris keeps saying that he tried to stop Bobo. He did not. He just ducked in and stayed. Tomo didn't even say anything. He just walks into the into his drawer, just hiding.
He's hiding his locker.
And all of a sudden, Dario, I just tried to see where I can duck and go away. But Bobo was so fast and so big, I could not get away from his hands. So he I tried to run. He grabs me by the throat and he just pins me in. At that time, Jim Henry, the fitness coach, and everybody else tried to pull away Bobo. I mean, Bobo do not move. And all of a sudden, I can see the death in his eyes. I can actually see it. His eyes were like that. He got me pinned in. I was trying to grab anything I can just to survive. That was Bobo about it.
Incredible. How did that end? Did he just give up?
You know, the funny thing is,
you realize it was
all of a sudden, you know, you see fire, and you just saw Bobo just realized what happened. He just dropped me, and he just ran into the sauna. He stayed there for 45 minutes.
Thirsty, big shout.
He'd have been devastated as well because of the game, obviously. Look, I think we know how the season played out.
I don't think it was Bobo's fault. I really don't.
No. He was. You know.
He was getting the blame.
I heard you say sorry.
Actually, I could have said it. But the funny thing is that we had so many fights.
Yeah.
We just didn't like to lose. We did not like to lose the way we lost. You know, by our mistakes, because we knew we were better. We knew what we stand for. That's why, you know what? We forgive each other. We move on, and we do the right things. But we have to make sure we let each other know what we're doing wrong and why we're doing it and how we're going to get better.
I think you all started the Motherwell game, didn't you? The last game. But you knew it was going to be Martin's last league game as well. I know the Scottish Cup final is still to come. Okay. But that must be, we're talking about regrets, that must be, does it make you angry when you reflect back on that, the way that season ended? Or do you just, you wonder how it got to that point?
I mean, it was a crazy game. We could have been at 5 or 6 up.
Yeah.
You know, the amount of chances we had. Mm. Bellamy, Big John, had a few chances. I think you had one or two. You scored the first goal, didn't you? Mm. I mean, the game should have been over.
Yeah.
And it's like 2 minutes ago, and a kind of freakish run over. McDonald scoops it over his shoulder. Shouldn't have happened. Mm. But, you know, we hold ourselves to blame. Mm. It's turned out to be my last league game as well.
Yeah.
I didn't know at the time.
No. It's crazy because we're talking here about the success, 7 trophies, domestic trophies under Martin O'Neill, 3 league titles in 5 years. Could have been 5 out of 5. That's how good you were, though.
I think if you looked at the points which Martin finished season on season out, I mean, I think they're all well into the 90s.
Yeah.
I think one was over 100.
Yeah.
You know,
second
one season,
I think, wasn't it?
As well. But when you go back to the 90s where Rangers were totally dominant and Jackie part of the team which stopped 10 in a row, and Rangers were the big spenders at that particular time. They were mopping up a lot of big hitters, Loudrup, Gascoigne, they had a good team and they were dominant, and to be part of that 5-year period under Martin O'Neill where I know that Celtic, they turned the tide, and I think that those 5 years are the foundation of where Celtic are today. To lose the league by a goal and I think it was a point, wasn't it? The Motherwell, was it a point?
Goal difference.
Whatever it was, bitterly disappointing. Bottom line is, I don't think Martin deserved that. But often things don't. you know, you always have a view of how things are going to all end in a sort of fairy tale manner. Often things don't work out like that.
Well,
but Martin didn't deserve that. And the dressing room, actually, you know, was possibly worse than Sevilla with regards to the, you know, that game at Motherwell. But it was, you know, it was what it was. But no, I mean, that was a tough one to take.
You had to pick yourselves back up again because you still had the Scottish Cup final, didn't you? Dundee United, which was Martin's last game. So fitting then, you won that to make sure he had silverware to go out on.
Yeah, we had to win it. We knew what was coming after. There was a lot of uncertainty about what was going to be next, who's going to be the next, because we had such a great journey, such a great ride with the manager, with the players. You knew that when a manager like Martin O'Neill leave the club, then many more will follow. And that's what actually happened. But there was a lot of question there. We just wanted to make sure we'll send him in a high. Yeah. We'll make sure that you have the send-off that he actually deserved.
What was it like when he left at the club? Because you eventually followed him, of course, in your career. Yeah.
That's a good one. Yeah. Chris would join us later on as well.
He did.
It was his dad. Yeah. I told him.
Only
a few players had a good relationship with the manager.
But you knew it was coming, obviously, that he was going to be leaving at the end of the season. But was the club just a completely changed place straight away? You still had the big part of that dressing room in there, the players that you had.
A lot of them was different. A lot of things has changed. I mean, for Chris, for Jack, he obviously left. Johnny Hudson, everything left. Only Lenny. They loved Lenny, so he's the only one. He had the success. But a lot of things has changed. Yeah. The personnel, the players. He was a completely different manager afterwards.
Yeah.
It was different atmosphere that I felt for the previous 5 years, because we had something special.
Yeah.
And when you take that away, it would always be the problem and the difference.
Jackie had left, obviously, end of the season. Were you there about 6 more months? Just into the next year?
Little Gordon came in and we had a falling out.
How did you feel then when he left? Because he was the man that got so much out of you.
I felt sick when he left. You know, not just Martin leaving, you know, John Robertson and Steve Walford. And it did feel like the end of an era. But these things, you know, do happen. And we all understand because of, you know...
Put his family
personal,
first.
And, you know, with Geraldine, that had to come first.
Yeah.
In terms of which direction the club was going to go... Or which route it was going down, you know, went for Gordon Strachan, and you know, different type of manager. I sort of felt uncomfortable in pre-season sort of with some of the things which were sort of said about the new manager coming in and how things were changing. You know, so the king is dead, long live the king. And you know, I thought that that whole momentum which Martin had built up, where it'd gone from, with the greatest respect, quite a flimsy Celtic team into a
there was awesome, so much change before Martin came in. Yeah, I think it was three managers in 3 years.
But in terms of being solid, more than solid, but well respected, feared. You know, you talk about the home record in European competition. Celtic hadn't had you know, regular European football, Champions League football, competing at the top level. And Martin had taken the club from nowhere, from nobody's in Europe, to teams coming to Parkhead, thinking,
"Resurrected your career."
Yeah, and which was great for me. But you know, to be part of that whole thing, and then for it to end. But you know, you always give new managers a chance. But in terms of, you know, and Gordon did well.
I was going to say there wasn't success under Gordon. There was, but I just meant more from the mentality point, because you were with somebody you all loved. You loved working under, and when that changes, that can't be easy, clearly.
No, it's right, but you know, these things happen. But you know, if you you can't compare what Martin did at the club. You know, it was easier for Gordon to come in with the transition and the foundation that Martin had built.
Absolutely.
Than what Martin actually took over and what Martin achieved. But Gordon actually did a pretty good job. I'm not mad on him, if you know, truth be told. But you know, he did a decent job.
He did.
He had the good key players. Yeah. You know, the key players were there. He could depend on early stages as well.
But that's another podcast. That's another story. But
yeah, I remember me and Chris. You know, with you talking about the change. Have you seen the change? The exit of the European football. I remember me and you sat down after, you know, gone
astray. The start of that season, that was a disaster.
This is something we sat down, and I remember we were talking about after the game. It was like, where the club is heading, because we had something incredibly special. We had so much success. We had incredible European nights, and all of a sudden, you exit from like, at the time when nobody expected to, that you expect to go ahead and do it. And that was the first change that we saw straight away. And that's where there was a lot of question asked as well. And he went and done really well, to be honest.
You know that feeling when you're about to score 30% off, but they want your number? Ugh. Give them your Line 2 number instead. It's a second line on your phone, perfect for nabbing promo codes without inviting spam to your party. Sign up for every discount under the sun, then block the junk texts that follow. You get all the perks, but none of the spammy baggage. More codes, less chaos. Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store and get your shopping sidekick today. Because the only thing blowing up your phone should be good deals.
BT Sport Pods.
Yes.
I mean, what an incredible five-year spell in the end. I mean, we've talked about some near misses there, but the 7 trophies, the UEFA Cup final, the changing of a football club. An amazing time at the club for you guys.
Yeah, it was special. I thought he was brilliant. I thought he was everything that he'd done. He changed the club, changed the mentality. You know, not just domestically, but actually going into European competition and getting into the next stages. I thought he was fantastic.
Just a special time in your life, Chris.
Yeah, I mean,
that's why we're still talking about.
Yeah. And I think Stilly and or Jackie mentioned about Martin standing on the steps, you know, when he first got the job at Celtic Park, and there are hundreds and thousands of fans outside, and everybody has, you know, all these fans have great hope and expectation. How many times has that happened at Celtic over the years? And the thing about Martin I always thought was, Martin is believable. So when he's standing there, you know, telling the Celtic fans that, you know, he's going to do everything he can to get the club back to where they belong, I think people believed him. Often they don't, and that's the measure of him, to actually go out there and he built brick by brick, built from the start, and within a short space of time, and that's the remarkable thing. You talk about, you know, the manager this season, Postecoglou, similarities in terms of how difficult it was, how hard it was, bigger gap. And how big the job actually was for Martin to do. And then with the first year of treble, unthinkable to win a treble. And then, you know, the next season competing in the Champions League and competing really well. And then the expectation grows with that, but the performances were there. We played Valencia, didn't we? Another good Spanish team. And we actually ended up going out on penalties to them, but I've missed as well.
Thanks for that. Somebody
missed too as well, eh?
That was, yours wasn't. but the thing I liked most of all was actually the big European nights, going out, and I mentioned that Valencia game, because they were a good side. They were a really, really excellent side, and we should have beaten them by more, but we pummeled them that day, and that's what I take great pride of, and that was what, you know, Martin gave us that belief, that organisation, but the fact we could play against anybody, and I mean anybody in European competition on our day, show that we were worthy competitors, and that's all down to one man, really.
And you know, the funny thing is, I was just a young boy. Actually, when Martin Hill came, it's always a case of timing of your career. Mm-hmm. We had the great pleasure to work under incredible, not just manager, but incredible person as well. Yeah. I became a man. He taught me how to respect, how to make the right dedication to a club, to the teammates, to the team, to the cause, which is something you don't learn. And I had the pleasure and the honour to play under him that many years, not just Celtic, but then I continued with Villa as well. That's why for me it was an incredible journey, and I'll never forget.
You've obviously gone through a lot in your life, Stillian, but I know Martin has been huge for you all the way.
This is another side that not many people know. We talked about Martin leaving because of his wife, Geraldine. I remember when I was when I got ill, when I was diagnosed, he was the first person that I actually contacted because I needed somebody to that I can trust, somebody who can give me a guidance where my treatment has to continue, you know, second opinion. I remember when he was at Sunderland, and he actually outside, he was taking sessions, so I had to phone the secretary and try to get him. He was on the phone after 30 seconds. 30 seconds spent about an hour with me on the phone. He didn't even come back to training, just to make sure that I was okay and I'll get the right treatment, and he'll put me with the right person. So he's not just Matt O'Neill as a manager.
Yeah.
That Martin O'Neill was a human being as well.
That says it all, and I think that's a fitting way for us to finish. Amazing stories, guys. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
BT Sport Pods.
Some matches are temporary, but your privacy shouldn't be. With Line 2, you get a second phone line just for dating. No need to share your personal number until you're ready. You can chat, text, and even block numbers, all while keeping things fun and private. It's perfect for online dating, blind dates, or just keeping things light. When you're ready to move on, Line 2 lets you cut ties without any drama. Dating should be fun and carefree. Line 2 keeps it that way. Ready to date on your terms? Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store today.
Ugh. Spam calls. Sound familiar? Introducing Line 2. Get a second phone number right on your existing phone. Imagine. Discounts. Appointments. Online forms. Handle it all without giving out your personal number. It's like having a secret weapon against spam. And when those unwanted calls sneak through, boom, blocked. No more interruptions. No more stress. Stay connected. Stay protected. Keep your main number safe and out of harm's way. Ready to take back your phone? Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store today.